chapter 8 of Daniel. I believe we started the chapter, but we'll begin again, see if we can do the chapter all in one shot. But there are some fascinating things happening over here. Some of them we began to deal with last week, and we'll continue. This is Bishnat Shalosh to Malchut Belshazzar, third year of Belshazzar, which is, of course, the last year of Belshazzar, which is not only the last year of Belshazzar, it means the fall of the mighty Babylonian Empire, which is, of course, certainly one of the reasons why the Sefer now switches from Aramaic to Hebrew. In a sense, it signals the fall, the crumbling of the Babylonian Empire. As long as the Babylonian Empire was in power, and Daniel was a member of that ruling class, Aramaic is the language. I have the feeling more of a feeling, that in the last year of Belshazzar, Jews are already making their way back to Eretz Israel. And in general, it represents the beginning of the end of Galut Babel, the beginning of the end of the Babylonian Empire, not only Babylonian Empire, but Babylonian exile. And as far as Jews are concerned, it is going to express itself in a return to Lashon Kodesh. The Rambam is the one who says, why did the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, the men of the Great Assembly, when they came back to Eretz Yisrael, why did they compose the Shmoneh Esrei and all of the Tfilot? Because after 70 years living amongst the Babylonians, Jews had forgotten Hebrew. Not only they had forgotten Hebrew, they weren't able to speak a straight sentence in one language. It sounded like what they call today Frumspeak. Did you see the book about Frumspeak? Oh, that's a fascinating book. Huh? You can imagine? In other words, the sentences like I mamish pashit have to tell you that it's vadai, that this is terrible shtick, what's going on over here. And one of the great classics over there is they put Lincoln's Gettysburg Address into Frumspeak. Mamish, 80 Jahre zurück. Da, hat man gebeut. Mamish, a grace in the Dina, you understand, etc. This is exactly the Rambam describes. He says that they were not able to speak a proper sentence in one language. This is at the beginning of Hilchot Tefillah, the laws of prayer. They spoke Ashdodit and Kaldit and Kazdit and Ashurit, all sorts of languages, and a person could not express himself in a decent manner in any one language. And Chachmei Yisrael, the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, felt that a Jew should be able to stand up before God and speak his mind and pour out his heart, but you have to pour out your heart in a dignified manner. So they composed the Shmoneh Esrei. By the way, the Shmoneh Esrei is magnificent in that it most probably includes anything and everything that may ever bother a person. There's some sentence in Shmoneh Esrei that addresses it. So I have the feeling that the switch in chapter 8 from Aramaic to Hebrew represents the end of Babylonian Empire and two, end of Babylonian exile and a return to a pure Lashon Kodesh. Yes? And since this decision was taken by Daniel, we have to ask ourselves, why indeed did he do it? And one of the answers that I've given comes from the Abarbanel, because this is third year of Belshazzar, which represents the end of the Babylonian Empire, so that the Babylonian language, is really not going to be significant to the Jewish people anymore. Even though, of course, you may ask me a difficult question, and I'm not afraid of it. I'm not going to answer it. Talmud Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud that was written in Eretz Yisrael, was written in pure Aramaic. Talmud Babli, the Babylonian Talmud, is more Hebrew than the Talmud Yerushalmi. Why do you think Talmud Yerushalmi is difficult to learn? The language is heavy. It's Aramaic, and it's a kind of, I would say, stenographic Aramaic. I can't imagine. I mean, in Daf Yomi, we just learned Masechta Shkalim. Right now they're learning Yuma. I think women should also know about Daf Yomi. It's all right. Learning Masechta Yuma, the one before was Shkalim. Shkalim is, there is no Talmud Bavli, it's only Talmud Yerushalmi. The language is so much different. The sentence structure, in other words, in the sentence structure in Talmud Yerushalmi, there are words that you have to understand or imagine are in the sentence. It's heavy. It's heavy. I think the difficulty that most people had with learning Shkalim was pushing the sentences. Very difficult. So here it is, Talmud Yerushalmi, written by the Israelis, is written in Aramaic. Now there is discussion about Aramaic. I can go to a whole shiur on that, but that, I have a feeling that especially in light of the fact that Rav Kook said Talmud Yerushalmi is infinitely more profound than Talmud Bavli. There's always this feeling that Talmud Bavli really did a job, the Babylonian Talmud, wow, that, you have everything there. Talmud Yerushalmi is much smaller. It's much smaller, first of all, because sentences are very, very much condensed. A lot of words that you have to imagine are there in the pasuk. I have a feeling that what they wanted to do was maintain the Torah Sheba'al Peh dimension of the oral law. I think we discussed it somewhere at some point. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi wrote the Mishnah in about the year 200 in Eretz Yisrael. By the way, the Mishnah is classic poetic Hebrew. Pure classic poetic Hebrew. The Rambam, when he writes about Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who wrote the Mishnah, so he says that one of the great advantages of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, in addition to the fact that he was tzaddik and he was gadol and awesome Talmud Chacham, his command of the Hebrew language was awesome. And therefore the Mishnah is written in a very, very pure Hebrew, which the Rambam borrowed that style when he wrote his great magnum opus, the Mishnah Torah. He copied the style of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi in the Mishnah, and therefore the Rambam is so easy to read. It really is very easy to read. And sometimes you make the mistake, because it's so easy to read, you think that what he's saying is so simple, when every word is weighed and measured. And there's a tremendous amount of profound meaning in each word. But even Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who took this bold step of committing to writing that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu originally wanted should be transmitted orally, he retained the nature of the oral law even in the Mishnah. Because even if you're going to learn Mishnah, fact is, you will not understand the Mishnah unless somebody explains it to you. And ultimately, 300 years later, they had to write the Gemara, which was the explanation of the Mishnah. So even when the Talmud was written, it still retained its oral lawness, because you couldn't learn it alone. You're not going to become a Talmud Chacham yourself. And I said it recently, you can have the Art Scroll Gemara, you can have Steinsaltz, you can have tapes, you can have videos, you can have Spielberg's Talmud Bavli if he ever decides to do that. And there's one thing I can guarantee you, you will pick up a tremendous amount of information, but one will never a Talmud Chacham become without a Rebbe. Now I have a feeling that those who wrote the Talmud Yerushalmi were more concerned about maintaining the Rebbe-Talmud relationship. And therefore they wrote the Talmud in such a style that makes it very, very difficult. You're going to need a Rebbe to take you by the hand through Talmud Yerushalmi. You could get through Talmud Bavli a little easier, especially since Talmud Bavli later was graced with Rashi, and Rashi, of course, is awesome. But Talmud Yerushalmi retains that oralness. So therefore, you see, I'm trying to explain what may seem to be a contradiction. Here I'm saying that because the Babylonian Empire has come to an end and Golos Babel is coming to an end, therefore, symbolically, the switch is now demonstrated by the switch to Hebrew. In addition to the fact that in this chapter, chapter 8 is going to be devoted to two of the four beasts of chapter 7. There were four beasts in chapter 7. He saw coming out of the Yam, Daniel saw four frightening beasts. The lion, the bear, the leopard, and that fourth one that was so frightening and so terrifying, it doesn't even have a beast that you can relate it to. The whole chapter is devoted to two of those beasts. And here, finally, we're going to hear real names being used, and for that matter, real places. From here on till the end of the Sefer, we're coming out of the clouds, and we're not talking about amorphous beasts out there, but they're going to be given names. And this chapter is going to be talking about the Persian and the Greek empires. That's what it's going to talk about. And it's going to be said clearly. Poras, Yavan. Now it means, therefore, the two beasts that this whole parak is talking about and all that are going to come later are all going to be part of the Eretz Yisrael experience of the Jewish people. Jews return to Eretz Yisrael by virtue of the decree of Koresh, king of Paras. Whoever wants to go up to Eretz Yisrael can go. It was during the days of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus and Esther, that the Beit HaMikdash was rebuilt. Everything is taking place now. The scene, the Jewish scene, is shifting to Eretz Yisrael. So, of course, that's why I had to explain, if the Israelis are so Hebrew-minded, why is Talmud Yerushalmi written in Aramaic? So I say that Talmud Yerushalmi is written in Aramaic in order to retain, on the contrary, it means that Aramaic is no longer their first language, and it is written in Aramaic in order to retain the mystery of Torah Shebaal Peh, or the necessity of having a Rebbe who sits down and learns with you. That's the way Torah was originally supposed to be taught. Originally it was supposed to be fathers, and fathers did a good job for about 1,000 years, and then fathers fell down on the job. It was v'shinan tam levanecho. You should teach your sons. And it was during the period of the second Beit HaMikdash that there was a Kohen Gadol by the name of Yehoshua ben Gamla, who set up the first school system in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says about him, in every village, town, and hamlet, he made a Talmud Torah. And Zohar Oso Ha'ish LaTov, Yehoshua ben Gamla is remembered LaTov because he saved Torah. Because he saw that fathers were not doing their job, so therefore, in loco, parentis, he established a system where teachers, the Rebbe, took the place of the father. Huh? Why? What changed? I assume that what changed was Tzaras. Now, it's during a long period, that Jews lived in Eretz Yisrael, ish tachat gafno v'tachat heinato, in some kind of a semblance of stability. So the family was able to continue to function in its normal way. When there are upheavals in the world and people are moving from place to place and there is a lack of that sense of security and rootedness, the family does not function in the way that it should function. And therefore the fathers no longer were able to do what they were supposed to do. I mean, there were all sorts of changes taking place in the world, and Jews found themselves at the middle. All of the major empires from Babel and further, all of the major empires began their great march to power smack in the center of the Middle East, right here. Whenever there were superpowers, if it was Greece on one side and Persia on the other side, the route of battle always moved through Eretz Yisrael. If it was Assyria and Egypt, to move armies, you had to go through Eretz Yisrael. If it was Babel and Mitzrayim and Cush, everybody, all the world's ills came to roost right over here in Eretz Yisrael. So it became a period of great upheaval. And in a period of great upheaval, the family does not function the way it should. All right. We're falling behind. We have to move ahead. Mishnat Shalosh to Malchut Belshazzar Amelech, Chazon Nireh Elai, Ani Daniel, in the third year of Belshazzar, the king, a vision appeared to me, I, Daniel, Acharei HaNireh Elai B'tchila, after the one that I saw before. Why does he mention the one that he saw before for only one reason? I mean, the truth is he didn't have to say. I mean, after the one that was shown to me before. If you looked at the beginning of the previous chapter, it was the first year of Belshazzar. Now it's the third year, so obviously it's afterwards. Why he's saying that it's afterwards is because he wants to say that this is the commentary on the dream before. And I saw in the vision, and it came to pass as I saw, I am in Shushan Abira. By the way, this is also an indication, this is a clear indication that the center of gravity of the world has moved. Up until that point, the megalopolis of the world, everything went through the great mighty city of Babel, but everything is moving, the center is moving to Shushan HaBira. Shushan HaBira is the capital of the Persian Empire. There is a machloket over here amongst the Mefarshim. Is he really in Shushan HaBira? Or in his mind's prophetic, or Ruach HaKodesh Hai, he sees himself in Shushan HaBira? This is a question that is raised by the Mefarshim, and there are both opinions. He may very well be physically in Shushan HaBira. And by the way, it's important for him to say that. I mean, to us, on the normal circumstances, it wouldn't make any difference where the vision happened. But over here, it's important to say where it is, or he may very well be there. Now, some of the Persians say that he may very well be there. What happens in the last year of Belshazzar? In the last year of Belshazzar was the handwriting on the wall. And he brings, Belshazzar asks all of his great astronomers and astrologers, all of his wise men, to read the handwriting on the wall. And it's the queen mother that tells him, hey, wait a minute, what about Daniel? Why didn't the king think of Daniel? So the Mefarshim say, you know why he didn't think of Daniel? Out of sight, out of mind. He was in Shushan HaBira already. Either some say he was on a mission for the king, or whatever. He was in Shushan HaBira, he was not in Babel. And he had to be recalled from Shushan HaBira in order to read the handwriting on the wall. Don't ask me how close they are. Don't ask me how they traveled. Don't ask me how long the handwriting was on the wall. I don't know. Okay. I saw the look on your face. I read it. By Yehibir Oti, Vin Ami B'Shushan Abira, Asher Be'elam Hamedina. Elam is southern Turkey, northern Iran. And we're going to see more about Elam. Elam is mentioned in a lot of places. It's mentioned in a lot of places, in beginning in Torah. One of the five kings, Kedar LaOmer, was it Kedar LaOmer? Huh? Kedar LaOmer, the four kings and the five kings of Avram, Kedar LaOmer was the king of Elam. Ve'ere b'chazon, is this the third time? The second time he says, the pasuk begins with the words, Ve'ere b'chazon, and I saw in a vision. And then he continues for a second time, by Yehibir Oti, and it came to pass as I saw. And then the end of the pasuk, Ve'ere b'chazon, I saw in a vision, V'ani ayiti al uval ulai. Now, I think we've tried to explain the repetitions of and I saw. In a sense, he has to look, you know, concentrate on his looking because it's not so clear. And what's also important over here is uval ulai. Uval is a river, a stream, the Ulai River, that's the name of the river. Chazal say that Nevi'im very often saw prophecy near a body of water, because a body of water represents purity. There are even some of the Mefarshim who say, and by the way, this is mainly with those who see in Chutz Laretz, Yecheskel is always seen near a body of water, Nahar Kavar, the river of Kavar. It represents purity, and there are even some of the Farshim who say that they see the images of the dream in the water. It's reflected in the water. So there he is. He says, I'm here. Hayiti al uval ilav esenai. And I lifted my eyes, and I saw v'hinei ayil echad. How do they translate an ayil? You know, all these simple animals. A ram is a papa sheep. Is that what he is? I think I'm going to have to go one of these days after all these years. Huh?
A male sheep.
A ewe is a female adult sheep. The ewe and the ram. Very good. So the ayal is a ram. Ram. Okay. V'hinei ayal echad omeid lefnei ha'uval. A ram is standing before the uval, the river. V'lo kronoyim, and it has horns. V'hakronayim gvohot, and the horns are big. V'ha'achat gvoha min ha'shinit, but one of the horns is taller than the other. V'hagvoha ola ba'achrona, and the one that is taller comes up after. In other words, it begins to grow. He sees the horns growing out of the ram. He sees the first one, and then he sees a second one begin to grow, and the second one ends up being taller than the first one. Ra'iti et ha'ayil, and then I saw the ram, menageach, a ram, I imagine, it gores with its horns, and it gores Yoma to the west, Safona to the north, Vonegba into the south. There's only one direction that it does not gore, and that is to the east. V'chol chayot lo yandu lefanav, and no beasts can stand before him. Do you understand? What's fascinating over here is the ram is not a beast. The ram is an animal, a behemoth. We're not talking about a wild beast, and wild beasts can't stand before this ram. V'ein matzil miyadon, nobody can save anybody from the hands of the ram. V'asok kiritzono, and he did as he pleased, as was his wish. V'higdil, and he grew great. V'ani hayiti mevin, and then I continued mevin. Mevin is more than seeing. In other words, he's concentrating in order to understand. In other words, he has to put in more effort than a Yeshayahu or a Yirmiyahu. Very rarely do they say, and I saw, or I pondered, or I mulled, or I meditated. He has to put in more effort. And he says, V'hinei tzvir ha'izim bo min ha'ma'arav. And behold, the tzvir ha'izim. That's a goat? How do they translate it?
A he-goat.
Tzvir ha'izim. So we have a billy goat. Tzvir ha'izim. Bo min ha'ma'arav is coming from the west. The direction is important. Al pnei kol ha'aretz. And this goat is upon the entire face of the earth. V'ein nogea ba'aretz, and he doesn't touch the earth. He seems to be flying above the earth, moving swiftly. V'hatzofir keren chazud bein einav, and this tzofir, the goat, the billy goat, there's a horn that has grown between his eyes. It's seen, chazut, it is seen between his eyes. Vayavoat ha'ayil balakranayim, and then the two clash. The goat makes its way until it meets up with the ram who has the horns, asher ha'iti, the one that I saw, omeid lefnei ha'uval, standing before the river, Vayorotz a love, and the Tzvir ha'izim, that is the goat, runs toward him bechamat kocho, with the wrath or the anger of his might. Did I translate that correctly? How's chamat kocho translated?
Fury of his power.
That's very good. Okay, the fury of his power. Ude'itiv magia etzel ha'ayil, and I saw him reach next to the ram. Vayit marmar elav. Number of pshatim vayit marmar. Either it comes, it can mean quickly, or it can mean, come from the word mar, which is bitter, with b bitterness, meaning with anger, ferocious, it smites the isle by Yishaber et Shtei Kronov, and he broke two of his horns. The isle, the ram, didn't have the strength to stand before him. Remember, this is the same ram that we learned about a few psukim earlier, that none of the beasts can stand before the ram. And now, the ram can't stand before the goat. By Ashlichehu Arza, he cast him down to the ground. By Yirmisehu, that is the goat, tramples upon the ram. There was nobody who could save the ram from the hands of the goat. Utsvir ha'yizim higdil ad miod. That billy goat, that he goat, grew higdil, grew great ad miod. That means he grows bigger and stronger than the ram. At the end of Pasuk 4, it said, the last three words in Pasuk 4, talking about the ram, said, for asakir it so no, he did as he wished, the higdil, and he grew great. Now when the Pasuk describes the goat, and it says about the goat, higdil ab ma'od, very much, in order to leave us the perspective of understanding that whoever the goat represents, it is a great deal mightier and stronger than the ram that preceded it. Ucha'atzmo, and as he grew mighty, what it really means is at the peak of his power, most probably just as he is about ready to take steps of even greater might and power, Nishbara HaKeren HaGadola, the big horn. The big horn. Well, you know, there's a little horn and there's a big horn. I didn't think that. Who's that? That was Custer? Custer's last stand was at Little Big Horn. Oh, gosh. I hope nobody hears this tape. Well, it was they died with their boots on. Remember that? Anybody who says that they remember that movie has dated themselves very clearly, I understand. Was it? They have real. Oh, they died with their boots on? Saw that when I was a little boy. Was it Alan Ladd? Huh? Douglas Fairbanks Jr.? I'm going to erase this.
The
big horn. So there's a big horn, and the big horn is rough. Of course, when you're going to see what all of this represents, it's mamish history. History is being seen by Daniel. It's amazing. The big horn is broken. And you know what came in its place? There came up in its place those that look like four horns in its place. And of all things, I don't know how the four horns are on the same animal, but they point to all four directions of the world. Umin ha'achat mehem, and from one of the horns, yatsa keren achat mitzira, a small one, vatigdal yeter, el ha'negev, ve'el ha'mizrach, ve'el ha'tsevi. And that one grew even greater in the direction of the south, to the east, ve'el ha'tsevi. Tsevi means Eretz ha'tsevi, or Eretz ha'tsvi. Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz ha'tsvi. Now I'll tell you, the real meaning of Eretz ha'tsvi, you should know from here from Daniel. The word tsavi has been used a number of times in Daniel. And the word tzavi means something that a person wants or desires. By the way, the word also appears in the Ksuba when it says that the chazan is going to give the kallah such and such. V'tzavi chasan denan, our chazan Reb Shmerel ben Beryl HaKohen. You understand, tzavi, he wants to add to the ketuba, and he has therefore added 72,000 shtalim chadashim or something of that sort. Vitzavi. Vitzavi means something that one wills or wishes or desires. Eretz Yisrael is Eretz HaTzvi. Like Eretz Chemda. But the word Tzvi comes from the word Tzavi in Aramaic. Vatigdal. Now this little horn has grown at Tzvo Hashemayim until the very heavens. Tzvo Hashemayim means the tremendous powers of the heavens. Vatipol Arzo min Hatzvo umin Hako Chavim, and it fell when it reached the stars. It fell and was trampled. Now, of course, we're going to have to, fill in each case. Let me just tell you, and this is going to be a pasuk later in the Neil. The stars are Klal Yisrael. Mazhidim kikokvei hashamayim, the ones that shine like the stars of the heaven. How many times does Rashi say in Chumash that God counts the Jewish people just as He counts the stars? Mona kochavim b'mispar. He counts the stars. He counts the Jewish people. Va'ad saratzava higdil. And this little horn, do you know how far it went? It tried to grow as big as the commander-in-chief, the Sar HaTzava. Maybe you have to know who the Sar HaTzava is. So Pasuk in Yeshayahu, Hashem Mefaked Tzava B'Milchama. The only commander-in-chief that's not running for office is the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. He is the ultimate Sar HaTzava, the Ramatkal. Maybe we should start letting you in on a little bit of what's going on over here. We're going to see it soon. So why keep you in the dark? The ram is the Persian Empire. The ram is the Persian Empire. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, yes. The horn, and I'm now talking about the ram. The ram has two horns. And he says, yes, right? And he sees one horn grows out, and then there's a second horn that grows bigger. The horn always represents strength. About Yosef, the karnei ra'im karnav, the horns of Yosef, is it Yaakov who says it at the end of Vayechi, in Vayechi, or is it Moshe I think it's Yaakov. He describes Yosef, the might of Yosef, that karnei ra'im karnav, his horns are the horns of a ram. Bahem amim yenagach, with them he will fight out against the nations of the world. The horn represents the strength and the might of an animal.
Yes, I'm saying that I understand that it signifies might, strength, mm-hmm. power. Object
have you ever seen you've seen pictures of great hunters? What does a hunter bring back? He brings back the horns. The horns represent, even today, horns represent strength, might, power. Huh? They kill animals for their horns. Sure. Yeah, I think that even today we can say that it represents strength and might. Now, it says over here that the ram has a second horn that starts growing, and the second one is bigger than the first. Because since the ram represents the Persian Empire, so the Persian Empire really, as we have seen here in Daniel, it's really a partnership, and it's an alliance of the Medes and the Persians. The first kingdom of the two that rules are the Medes, but then the Persians grow stronger and they take over the entire empire. The night that Belshazzar is killed, we had the pasuk earlier. So Daryovish Modai, Daryovish, the Mede, becomes king, but he only remains king for about a year or two. And then it's Koresh, his son-in-law takes over. And from then on and further, just as we have pointed out, they didn't say for Daniel, it's always Modai u'Paras. And when we get to Megillas Esther, it's always Paras u'Modai. because the Persian Empire becomes the preeminent one in that alliance. So therefore, the two are represented by two horns. The first horn that he sees is overpowered and overshadowed by a second horn that he sees coming out, which is taller and bigger than the previous one. The first one represents Madai, and the second one is Persia, Paras, and Paras becomes bigger than Madai. Yes? Good. These two animals did not appear. Very good. All right, so you can see the point to all of this. This is very important. All of a sudden, these animals that were once beasts are now described as, nice animals. And the point over here is simply the following. In order to let it be known to Daniel that in a certain sense and for a long period of time, these two beasts are going to conduct themselves in a very friendly way to the Jewish people. They're going to be domesticated animals. There's going to be a long period of time, certainly under Persia. There were ups and downs in the relationship between Persia and the Jewish people. But in the final analysis, it was Persia that gave permission for Jews to return to Eretz Yisrael. It was Persia that gave the materials for the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. Beast 1 and Beast 4 were the destroyers of Beit Mikdash 1 and Beit Mikdash 2. Beast 1 was Babel, destroyed the first Beit HaMikdash. Fourth beast, the one with no face, is the one that's going to destroy the second Beit HaMikdash. The two in the middle, there will be periods of difficulty. There will be one member of next animal, of course, the goat, the billy goat, that comes out of the west and goes flying across the earth is going to be Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great. Now, Alexander the Great is, for all intents and purposes, going to be very good to the Jewish people. One of those who takes over the kingdom afterwards is going to be Antiochus. That's going to be some while later. He is going to be the evil one. But otherwise, the Greek Empire really was benign as far as the Jewish people are concerned. But of course, some of the things are so amazing. When he talks about the ram, the Tzvir Izim, in Pasuk 8, Utzvir HaYizim Higdil Ad Meod, the Tzvir HaYizim grew very great. Ukotzmo. And when he reaches, just he's beginning to reach his peak, Nishbara. Alexander the Great died at age 32. He was poised, 32. 32 is still a bicycle. He had already, by the time he had 32, he had control of a major part of the civilized world. He would have had another 10 years. He would have created a world globe-girdling empire. But at the peak of his power, he's cast down. And what comes in its place? Four other horns come in their place, and that's really the division of the of the Greek Empire. I even went back to history. I went through Gretz on that period. I forgot the names of all the generals. There were four generals who divvied up the empire. Maybe my next week, I think I should make that a project to remember the names of the four generals. What does that remind you of? What were the four Japanese aircraft carriers that were sunk at Midway? Nobody knows the four Japanese aircraft carriers. Huh? No. The Hiryu, the Soryu, the Kagi, and the Akagi. Alright. Yeah, I think my grandchildren already will know what the four aircraft carriers were. You know what else you have to know? And yeah, I don't remember them. As years go on, you get. What were the names of the five boats of Cherbourg? That the Israelis. New Year's Day, 1969. They abducted them. That's right. All I remember is that all of them had to. One was the Tsar, Storm, Tempest, Volcano, Tsar, Gosh. I don't know. I'll have to learn that too. But we'll But the four generals, that person wanted to write down the four generals who take over, because they are the four little horns that come out of the Greek Empire. Now, why am I telling you? Because we were talking about Pasuk Yud Aleph, Va'ad Sar HaTzavo Higdil. This kingdom that comes after Greece, who's the little horn? The little horn that's going to become the big horn is going to be Rome. And Rome already is going to wage war with the great commander-in-chief. He's going to destroy the Beit HaMikdash. He's going to be mecharef u'megadev, blaspheme the great commander. That's the pasuk we're up to. But Sar HaTzavo Higdil, all the way up to the Sar HaTzavo, to the great commander-in-chief. U'mimenu, and from him, Huram HaTamid, and from him, either was removed the Tamid, which represents the end of the Beit HaMikdash, v'hushlach mechon Mikdasham. Now, do you see how, as you go from word to word, things become clearer? I think the moment that we say the second half of this pasuk, u'mimenu huram hatamid, the tamid is the daily sacrifice, v'hushlach mechon mikdasho, the foundation of his temple is cast down. Now we're already talking in very clear terms. I think these are the first words in the whole chapter that we can immediately identify with. B'chon Mikdasho is the Beit HaMikdash. We're talking about somebody who destroys the Beit HaMikdash. V'tzavo tinatein al hatamid b'fasha. The word tzavo has a number of meanings. Over here it may very well mean that tzavo, an army or a time, will be given for the one who committed the crime of destroying the constant sacrifice. And what else he did was v'tashlech emet arza, he cast truth down to the ground, v'asetav v'hitzlicha. And unfortunately, this, we are now, without even mentioning it, we're talking about the fourth beast. It's not the Ayal, and it's not the Sfir HaYizim. Now we're talking about the that little horn which represents the fourth beast. And watch, you'll have to see another few psukim, and I have something else to read with you today. Bo'eshma'ah. Now, up until this point is the vision. He doesn't understand the vision yet. He doesn't know yet. I've already clued you in on what it is that he sees. But then Daniel says, "V'eshmoa echad kadosh medaber." I heard one holy one speak. Vayomer, a malach, of course, an angel. Vayomer echad kadosh. One holy one said, "Lepal la palmoni hamedaber." Palmoni. You know what palmoni is? Anonymous. It's a contraction of ploni almoni. The palmoni. And ploni almoni, ploni really, in a sense, comes from the word pele. Pele means something that is concealed, we don't know who it is. Almoni means from Elaim, one who is silent, the unknown one. So he says, I heard him, one holy one said to palmoni hamidaber ad matai hachazon hatamid v'hapesha shomeim, until when will this vision of the Tamid and the sin and the desolation take the Kodesh, the Tzavah, Mirmas? The second half of this pasuk is really going to be, in a sense, a beginning of an explanation of nearly everything that happens until the end of the Perek. There are all sorts of things that are, it's the end of the Sefer. It's going to be a time of desolation when sanctity, holiness, is going to be desolate. Now watch. Could we give this out? Come. Let's go. Sarah, give one to the lady at the door. I didn't write which side to start on. Start on the one that says 304. You see it has their page numbers? Right, there are page numbers, 304, 305. The Zmiris of Yom Shabbos. Let's read a little Zmiris. Okay. Baruch Hashem Yom Yom. Blessed is God every day. Ya'amos lanu. Ya'amos lanu means sort of he places upon us yesha ufigyon, salvation and redemption. Uvishmo nagil kol hayom, and in his name we will be full of joy every day. Ubi yeshuato narim rosh elyon. And through his salvation we will be able to lift our heads high. Ki hu ma'oz ladal, because God is the one who is the strength, the might, or the fortress of the poor, umachasen, he is shelter le'evyon for the poverty stricken. And of course, when we talk about penurious and poverty stricken, we're talking about it represents the idea of weakness and being weak and being small. And we are the ones, we are, as Moshe Rabbeinu says, Lo meiru bechem mikol ha'amim chashak Hashem bechem. It's not because you are the biggest of all the nations of the world that God desired you. Ki atem hama'at mikol ha'amim. On the contrary, you are the smallest of people. Shiftei kol Yisrael edut. The tribes of God who make up Yisrael are the ones that bear edut, testimony that God exists. Throughout history, Klal Yisrael are the ones that bear a message that God is but one. B'tzaratam lotzar, when they are in trouble to him, lotzar, he feels their oppression, he feels their pain. B'sivlut u'biavdut, in their suffering and in their enslavement, God feels it as well. B'livnat hasapir, heram oz Yedidut. The Livnat HaSapir represents the white one, it's the moon. Livnat HaSapir over here refers to the moon. He showed them through the moon, he showed them Oz Yedidut. Might and friendship and all. First mitzvah that Jews were given when they were in Egypt, HaChodesh HaZelachem, this month shall be unto you the first of months. The moon represents the renewal of the Jewish people. The Niblon, he revealed himself, Lahalotam, to bring them up out of Omek Bor Vadut, the depth of the pit, and a dut is like a kind of well. He appeared to them in order to bring them and raise them up. Ki im Hashem ha-chesed, because kindness is with God, v'harbei imo fedut, and with him there is a great deal of redemption. Mayokar chasdo, how precious is his kindness, b'tzilo, in his shade, legone nemo, that's from the word magain, they are shielded in his shade. B'kolos bavel, Shulach lema'anemo, in the exile of Bavel, for their sake, lema'anemo, for their sake, he went with them to Golos Bavel. Lahorid barichim nimnabe beinemo. They were brought down sort of in chains, barichim, that which tied them, and you know who can be counted amongst them, you know who's with them? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with Klal Yisrael. Vayitneim l'rachamim lifnei shoveimo. And he created an atmosphere in which they received mercy before shoveimo, the ones who took them captive, the shovim. Why is he down there in Golos Bavel with them? Ki lo yitosh Hashem et amo because God will not forsake his people, Tavur HaKadol Shemo, because of his great name. Elam. You ever heard of Elam? Elam shut Kiso Lahatzil Yedidav. In Elam, he established his throne to save Yedidav. Who are Yedidav? Klal Yisrael. Now, what this really represents is the idea that the kingdom is moving, the center of gravity of the kingdom is moving from Babel to Elam, and God, in a sense, is establishing a worldly throne down there, and for what purpose? In order to save his people from the hands of Babel. La'avid misham mo'uznei mordav, in order to destroy from them, from Babel, mo'uznei, the fortresses of Mordov, those who rebel against him. But the time has come for Babel to fall. They rebelled against God, a rejection of God, they fall. Me'avor bashelach toda et avadav. A shelach is a, in Tanakh, shelach is a sword. Avor bashelach means the one who is cut down by the sword. So that should not happen to his people. They should not be in the state of Avor Bashelach, Pada et Avadov, he redeemed his servants. Keren la'amo yarin. You see where the world, the word Keren now is used with regard to the Jewish people. By the way, there are, where else do we have psukim that describe the Keren of Klal Yisrael, the Chana? That's it. In Tfilat Chana, second chapter of Shmuel Aleph, Chana prays, Hashem Yorim Karno, let God raise the crown of his anointed one. And it also has another meaning. The keren, the horn, was used as something in which they poured, they kept the oil. David HaMelech was anointed by Shmuel from oil that was poured from a keren. So, not shol. Shol was from a pach. It was a jar. And if it's from a jar, it's a kingdom that will not last. If it is from a horn, then it's a kingdom that will last. The horn represents, by the way, not only strength, it also represents beauty and a lot of good things. Yeah, in Shir HaShirim? I don't remember it offhand. Alright. Tehila l'chol chasidav, God therefore will be a source of praise for all of his pious ones. Kim hoga v'richam. Hoga means he feels their pain. V'richam, and he has mercy on them. Kirov chasadav, because of his great kindness. Now, how many people read the next paragraph and really they can go through a whole lifetime and not know what the next paragraph is talking about? You can rest assured that you're gonna know it. Utsfir ha'izim higdil atzumav. The tsfir ha'izim. Instantly. Chapter 8 of Daniel. That's the only... The he-goat, Higdil Atzumav. By the way, in the little parish over, this is taken from the Rinas Yisrael Siddur, Utsvir Ha'izim, Kina L'malchus Yavon, according to Neneel Ches Ches. The Tzvir Ha'izim is that which represents the goat, represents the kingdom of Yavon. Because remember, we were talking, for all intents and purposes, we talked about God redeeming the Jewish people from Egypt. We talked about him saving them from the hands of Babel. And now we are moving on to the kingdom of Yavon. Utsvir ha'izim higdil atzumav. The goat. Higdil atzumav, his might became great. The gam chazut arba olu limeromav. The vision of the four beasts who are going to rise in their greatness. Ubelibam dibu lahashchit et rechumav. And you know what those beasts wanted to do? In their hearts, they thought that they were going to destroy rechumav, the ones upon whom God has mercy. But you know what happened? Al yedei chohanav miger mitkamav. What a beautiful sentence. Through his priests, he destroyed. Miger is one of those interesting words. I'll show you in a moment. Through his Kohanim, he destroyed mitkomamav, those who stood up against him. So what is this referring to, obviously? The Chashmonaim, Chanukah. In other words, of course, the only period where the Tzvir Ha'izim stood up against the Jewish people was only at the time of Chanukah. Otherwise, the rest of the Greek Empire was an empire that was very kind to the Jewish people. On the contrary, Jewish life flourished, except for the one period, the period of Antiochus. And then, Al Yedei Kohanav, through his priests, Miger Mitkomamav. He destroyed Mitkomamav. Where do we have the word Miger? No, we don't have the word Miger, or something that comes from Miger. V'lamashinim alti sikva, v'chol azeidim meheda ta'akdim shmonesei. V'chol azeidim meheda ta'aker utishaber utamager. So I think, see them say, or others say, what's the meaning of the word to Magir? It's not a simple word. So they say you don't have to know what it was. Just take a look at the company that it keeps. Ta'aker, Tishaber, Tinager. Take a look at the company that it keeps. You know already what it means. Ayidei Kohanav, through his priests, Miger Mitkomamav. He destroyed those who stood up against him. Chazde Hashem Kilotanu, Kilochalu Rachamav. Where does it say Chazde Hashem? Yeah. No, it should be Eichol. Chaz de Hashem kolot tanu kilo chol rachamav. Is an Eichol? Did they say it? No, they don't say it. But wait, watch. The truth is, both the Daniel explains the Zmiris, but the Zmiris are also going to explain, let you in, because all of the references to the Chashmonaim are going to come up in the Prokim that we're going to learn. All of the... Now watch another thing. Nizgarti le'edom. Who comes after Yavan? Rome. Nizgarti le'edom. I was given over to Edom. Biyad re'ai midonai. That's the tragedy. The profound tragedy. Who gave me over into the hands of Rome? They are my friends, Midonai, who are fighting with one another. Midin, they were, it's Hyrcanus and Aristobulus, the last two members of the family of Chashmonaim. Their civil war gave us over into the hands of Rome. How many times have I quoted that Ramban at the beginning of Parshat Vayishlach? And the fact is that I found it later. It's another Ramban in Parshat Bechukotai. He says, Anachnu, we are the ones that brought about our destruction at the hands of Rome. We and we alone are guilty because we invited them into Eretz Yisrael, and you're going to see it in the Psukim later on, in the Mefarshim, it's going to be very clear. We invited them in, and we made a treaty with them, and according to the Gemara, they kept the treaty for 22 years, and then they broke it and shattered it completely. Those who had been invited in as friends, so to speak, or as saviors, or as neighbors, turned out to be the ones who then took over the country and destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. Nizgarti le'edom. So I was given over into the hands of Edom, biyad re'ai, my friends, the brothers. Re'ai over here means even more, it means brothers. Medonai, who fought with one another. Shebechol yom, mimalin kedesom me Adonai, and every day they fill their stomachs with all sorts of delights. And what he's describing over here is people whose purpose and goal was their own power, pleasure, prominence. That's what they, and that brought destruction upon us. Ezra to imi. Huh? Ezrato imi, his help was with me, lismoch et Adonai. Adonai means to, lismoch means to support Adonai, my foundations. In other words, in a sense, we still, you know, we were able to maintain ourselves, velona toshani kol yimei Adonai, but God did not forsake me kol yimei Adonai, all of the days of my time. The word Edon, we've had it a number of times in Daniel up until now. We're going to have it again in this chapter and in chapters to come. Edon is a period of time. In other words, now we're talking about after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash through Rome. Despite that, God remains with us through thick and thin. V'lo netoshani, He did not forsake me kol yimei Edonai, all the times of the periods of history. Kilo yiznach l'olam Hashem, because God is simply not going to forsake us forever. And then, now we begin to talk about, we move into the end of history, and there are also going to be, we've already had references to it. You remember in the last chapter, Daniel sees the old man, the ancient one who sits on his throne, the Atik Yomin. And remember, there's going to be the Varu, and behold, Im Anone Shmayo, with the clouds of the sky. There's going to come the Moshiach. There's going to be the period that will come later, and then that's going to be when God comes. Bivo'o Me'edom. Bivo'o, when He comes, Me'edom. He is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hamutz Bigadim. His garments are all red. They're stained with blood. Zevach lo v'bodzra, v'tevach lo v'bogdim. There is sacrifice. What it means is there are enemies of God in Israel that are going to, there's going to be a slaughter in Bodzra, and tevach, there's going to be a massacre, lo v'bogdim, against those who betray him. B'yez nitzcham malbushav la'adam. Yez nitzcham, fascinating word over here. Nitzcham, their eternity means their life. The blood. Person's blood represents his life. V'yez nitzcham, their blood comes shooting out malbushav la'adam to redden his garments. B'kocho ha'gadol, with his great might, yivtzor ruach nigidim, he is going to weaken the spirit and the strength of rulers. Hogo berucho hakosha beyond kadim. This is also a pasuk. Hogo berucho, he has removed with his wind, his strong wind, on an easterly day, a northeastern, and he removes, he sweeps away his enemies. Ra'uto. Kichein Adomi Ha'otzer, he saw Kichein Adomi Ha'otzer, and this is also a reference we're going to have to, he's talking about the red one, the red prince. An Otzer is a prince. What is Chasan of Jordan in Hebrew? He's the Yodesh Etzer. Huh? Yes. The Yodesh Etzer is the heir apparent.
But not much longer.
Yeah, well, where politics starts at 10:15, right. And this class is over, right?
Okay.
But the word, I mean, I'm only interested in teaching you words. Ra'oto kichein adomi ha'otzer. There's the red prince, so to speak, or the Tsar, and we're going to see later, Daniel is going to see the Sarim of the nations up in heaven. In other words, whatever struggle takes place down here on earth corresponds to a struggle taking place in heaven. The Adomi Ha'otzer, Yachshav lo Botzra Tiklot ki Tiklot Kibetza, the enemy is going to think that in Botzra there will be. By the way, there is a place called Botzra, and Yeshayahu talks about Botzra, but there is a place Botzra in. Is it in Iraq or in Iran? Iran. He's going to think that they will be safe. Tiklot from Ore Miklot, they're going to be protected in Betzer. Umalach ka'odam v'tocho yi natser. And he thinks that the cities of refuge are places even where angels can be saved. He doesn't know that in the ultimate end of history, not only is Edom, Romi, or the enemies of Israel going to be destroyed here, but they're going to be destroyed on high. The same battle is taking place up there. Umalach ka'odam, and he thinks that an angel, just like man, betocha, in her, in Batzra, yi natzer, he can be protected. Umezit kashoge b'miklot yeyotzer, and even the one who has intentionally caused suffering, that's the mezit. And the shogeg is the unintentional. Cities of refuge are only for unintentional killers, not for people who with hatred went out against the Jewish people. He's making the mistake of thinking that mezid kishogeg, the one who did things intentionally, just like the one who did it unintentionally, bimiklot yeotzer, in that city of refuge, he will be saved. Ehevu et Hashem. So, in other words, that was his mistake, but God is going to destroy him in Batzra. Ehevu et Hashem, love God, kol chasidav emunim notzer. All of his pious ones who keep his faith, who keep the faith. All right, this is, I don't know if we'll finish it now, but of course the next step, or simultaneous to that step, comes the period of great kibbutz goliot, the ingathering of the exiles. Yitzavetz ur chazdo kihilotav lekabetz. The mighty one, in his great kindness, commands kihilotav, his communities lekabetz, to gather them in. May arba ruchot adav lehikabetz, from all four corners of the world, adav to him lehikabetz, they should be gathered. Ubahar merom harim otonu leharbetz. And here he's using the image of the Jewish people as the shepsalah, the sheep. And the sheep, you have them lie down, laharbeitz, at Har Merom Harim, that great mountain over there, otanu laharbeitz, that we should lie down there. V'itanu yoshuv nidachim koveitz, and with us he will, the dispersed ones will return and be gathered. Beautiful next sentence. Yashiv lo nemar ki im b'shav v'kibetz. The great first pasuk in all of Tanakh that describes kibbutz goliot. Where is the first time in Torah Nevi'im Ketuvim, the first time that the ingathering of the exiles is mentioned? It's in Parashat Nitzavim. V'shav Hashem Elokecha et Shvutcha v'richamecha v'shav v'kibetzcha mikol ha'amin asher hefitzcha Hashem Elokecha shava im yenidachecha b'tzei Hashem shom mikabetzcha v'shav mikachecha. Right? So Rashi on the spot brings the Gemara over there where the Gemara says v'shav Hashem Elokecha et Shvutcha, God will return your captivity. So Rashi says, but wait a minute, it should have said v'heishiv. The one who brings back is the Heshiv. What does Vishav mean? So he says, you know what Vishav means? That God is in exile with us and he's returning with us. Vishav Hashem Elokecha, your God is also returning. Because wherever Klal Yisrael has gone in exile, there the Rabbeinu Hashem was with them. Bechol Tzoratam Lo Tzor. Wherever they were in trouble, he was with them. And you had that really in the second paragraph earlier when they went down to Mitzrayim, Batsaratam, Lotzar, Besivlutu Biavdut. Batsaratam, the second line in the second stanza, Batsaratam, Lotzar. And this is now repeated again, Yoshiv Lo Nemar. It doesn't say Yashiv, God is going to bring back, or Beheshiv, Ki'im, Veshav, the Kibetz, he is going to gather them together. Alright, I think we can stop here. We have to do the second half of chapter 8, of course, is going to express many more details of what it is that he sees in his vision. Magnificent, magnificent vision. Okay, so now, does everybody know what sphere he's in? At the Friday night table, tell them, I want you to sing Baruch Hashem Yom Yom.